Hello everyone, it's Chipchumba, and it's been a while. Welcome back to Future Lab Africa. You're listening to the sound of Sampa the Great. I absolutely love her. Go check her out online. So it's been a while. So if you're wondering where I've been, it's because Tegan Bistra has taken over Future Lab Africa, interviewing the digital art residents from the Faku Gezi Digital Art Innovation Festival. The festival was held in Johannesburg last year. So if you haven't had a chance to listen, stop everything you're doing, well, after this podcast, and go back and listen to her interviews. They're fantastic. We're going to switch gears a little bit and go back in time to one of the very first interviews that I ever did for this podcast. We're going to go back to Johannesburg, right in the middle of the Post-African Futures exhibition a few months ago. I had a chance to sit down with members of NTU, a spiritual agency for the internet, working for the forces of good. The members of NTU are Bokosi, Noland, and Tabata. And you can find more information about them on our website, futurelabafrica.org. This was one of the very, very first interviews that I ever conducted for Future Lab Africa. And because of that, you're going to get to have much more of an interactive experience. So forgive me already for the sound.
Well, the intention of NTU is we wanted to start a company that would come up with like interesting solutions to some of the problems that we're dealing with. Okay. But also as a vehicle to like, become generative in itself.
Yeah, I think it's not only a vehicle to come up with solutions, but a vehicle to come up with problems.
To come up with problems.
Yeah.
To the problems out there, to raise a certain awareness about like certain problems that we might be channeling. But I think our interest is mainly within like the internet and its structure, social and political. And so those problems, we want to put them out there. And we would like to find a solution, or propose an alternative to what exists.
I read that in Europe they now say that access to the internet is a human right. But so if only 40% of the world is connected to the internet and the vast majority of Africans are not or don't have this kind of access to the internet, then what does that make us? Like some pre-human or like not less human? But then also it's like, if this is the case, then what is the right? The right to go online and just see like all this abusive shit about yourself, or to like try to get involved or read an article and then just be like completely humiliated in the comment section. Just, this is just like the natural flow of attitudes and information on the internet is like completely anti-black, anti-poor, anti-African. There's this discourse. It's like maybe in society it's not so acceptable to express certain things, but on the internet it's completely acceptable. So you go on there and you see what people really think about you, not as a person, but as like some set of distinguishing characteristics. So is that the right, that Africans don't have the right to go and be abused? So I guess the thing of people, it's inevitable that everybody is going to be connected to the internet eventually. Like, the world needs that, just in its own logic, the logic of empire, the logic of capitalism needs everybody to be connected to the internet in order to make more money. Like, Google is putting hot air balloons with the internet to, all of this stuff it's not altruistic. Yeah. It's because they want to make more money. So it's inevitable that we will be part of this sense of humanity defined by the West. However, that's not good enough. Mm. Yeah. So maybe like NTU is a way to push these questions or the potential or maybe the potential evils of the internet to the forefront of the conversation, because it's not even potential. These things are there, and any person knows that Facebook, Twitter, like, you have to create your own spaces, and just to keep sane, like, there has to be a black Twitter just so black people can be sane, because outside of that, it's a hot mess. Yeah, this is my thing.
Yeah. I think people naturally, like, gather to, you know, what they're drawn towards in real life, and I think that happens on the internet as well. And, you know, the thing is, like, the technology itself is not discriminatory. It's just really the cultural structures that exist behind, you know, user experiences. But, you know, in itself, like, the idea of networks of points where people can, you know, easily communicate or travel or whatever, that in itself is, like, it's an old idea. It's pre-Western. You know, yeah, I mean, fungi have been found to have, like, an intelligence system within themselves to distribute, like, bacteria and, well, like, nutrients to trees far away from them. But it's also, like, it's really, it's an African idea.
Are you guys telling
me
that fungi invented the internet before we did?
Well, fungi in the sense of, like, fungi as nature, as, you know,
system of network communication,
definitely,
distance,
yeah.
Like, organism. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, like, really interesting research looking into how, like, types of fungi distribute, like, nutrients, like, through spaces, you know. But, like, you know, for us, you know, I think we've come to a point, well, you know, and also in my personal research, is trying to take a step back from, like, the rationalist, you know, Western paradigm that we live in, and try to look at ways of seeing, like, reality that existed on the continent, you know, before, you know, the world that we live in today is. And for us, I think that, you know, there are ideas and strategies that people are practicing that are quite similar to, you know, internet technology as well. Like the concept of Ubuntu in itself, like the philosophies of Ubuntu, which is where, you know, Ndu comes from, is like a quite, it's an inclusive, like, deep philosophical idea of harmony and interdependence and stuff. So for us, I think, you know, it's about bringing, you know, trying to raise, you know, these kinds of conversations and, like, contributing that or something.
But many people felt as though the explosion of the internet sort of gave Africa a different voice by offering an alternative. So before, when, especially from where I come from in Kenya, before 2008, I would say, during the post-election violence, was a time that Kenya really emerged on the internet. Many Kenyans felt that the internet offered them a way to speak for themselves. So in terms of, like, a reaction towards the media, so you had, like, stories about, oh, there was a violence happening in Nairobi or violence happening in Central African Republic, but the internet offered a place where people actually in Central African Republic or in Kenya could actually send messages and say, no, actually, this isn't happening, or this is happening to me in this way. And I think that, you know, even the way Africa was seen at the time before the internet was just a sort of safari, wildlife, or war-torn area. And then a lot of artists and a lot of people who participated on the internet really went on this different representation of Africa. So I don't know if you guys...
I'm sure, like, it did help, you know, and there is a way for people to confront, like, the propaganda of mainstream medias, but then it's become, like, it's a fringe and it doesn't really change like the narrative, because like even if you look at like the Ebola outbreak, I mean, I'm from the West, and you see the media, it was like, yeah, well, African dying, African disease or HIV, now it's Ebola. I mean, it's still now like the same narrative. So even if like they couldn't be confronted, and even if you look at like Black Twitter, like there is a space for like marginalized voice to be like more exposed, or like some blogs or zines for like people of color, you know, there is like a scene for like Black and brown bodies and voices on the internet. But I don't think that it changes how the West like sees African or Black people. Like you can see, like when looking at America, what's happening now, and like the killings, and like all like the migrants sinking Europe, like it's the same shit, you know. So yeah.
I, like advertising is like really central to the internet that we understand today, and so like a lot of the biggest spaces, you know, so leverage gets formed out of that leverage and like power, you know, and who, what voices or what points of view, you know, get more exposure. And I think advertising is something that like advertising online is something that also that really, you know, fundamentally needs to change, and that there's like ideas about how like that's, you know, advertising is a driving force on the internet won't necessarily like be the case. I think there's like the studies that show that revenue from advertising is actually falling on the internet, you know. So yeah.
But how about like creating spaces that have no relationship to the West? Do you think that those places exist on the internet where Africans are creating the internet specifically for their local community with no care or regard?
As long as the platforms are like, you know, Western or whatever, like that's, you know, you can do whatever you want. You know, I always say Facebook is the new exposure. You can have your group on Facebook, you know, your company page, or have your real conversations. But at the end of the day, they're benefiting so much more out of your metadata than you are out of the exposure that you get, you know?
Yeah, but I think it's also the question of like, of audience is like, of course you can make a space on the internet somehow, but who gets to see that and how do they get to see that? And the ways that the internet, like the infrastructure of the internet, the way that the internet's accessed is really tightly controlled by like quite a few, like a very few small group of search engines or like social media companies, browsers. So even if you make this kind of African internet space, if the way that the majority of African people are accessing the internet is via Google, Google search, Google curates those searches. Google, actually, you're talking about how do you get rid of like the hum of the internet? How do you make the internet a little bit smaller? Google does that on your behalf all the time. So everything you get like just off search is already a reflection of what they want you to get. And not only that, a reflection of their own kind of socio-political prejudices. So I think the question of how far we can go under these conditions is quite an important one. Like how real can you have, how real of a conversation can you have while still hosting it on Facebook, putting it, I don't know, you know, it within these structures, because these structures themselves already limit the scope that you can have, you know. So I don't know, like this thing about people around the continent posting their kind of counter narrative to what the West is saying, it still ends up being completely fringed by the general mainstream internet. So how can you give that voice a little bit more legitimacy? Or I don't know if legitimacy is the right word, but how can you take that moment of Kenyan people posting their own experiences online and put it into a place where it's given the kind of due that it deserves, instead of, I don't know, being again curated? Because again, they'll just choose the stories that kind of reinforce their prejudice. So I don't know. This question is a very, very big question. How to use the internet, how far we can go with this internet, and what kind of alternatives can we propose to answer these questions? Because we all love the internet. I mean, it's not because we hate the internet. It's just that it's...
so much. We're not Luda.
But there is something to be said about even... First of all, like thinking about what you guys are saying about educating people how to use it and how it affects you. I don't think people know what the internet, like how to understand themselves within the framework of the internet. So a lot of people don't even have an awareness of how it affects their interactions and the way they see the world. Like, for example, you were saying about Facebook, even the way you see news. The way news comes to you, it's based on algorithms that are dictated by the likes and the social settings. So, like, it's very rare for you to even see something on Facebook that challenges something that you don't already like. So it's all sort of based on that. So there's an education to it that most people don't talk about. But then there's also a cultural aspect of it. So do you think that African... I'm saying Africa like it's like a country.
I'm for that. Yeah.
It is... at the same point, I do see it in that it is a country. But I'm saying... I'm saying in the internet of things, you know, like there is a cultural, we're already at a alternative, we're already sort of juxtaposed against. Do you think there are things within the culture that you grew up with, or the African culture, whatever that means, that would provide a different lens to how the internet is, or teach people how to use the internet in an alternative way?
I think, I mean,
that
we should also...
Because she's looking at me like, what?
I think we also need to, like, distinguish between, like, social media, the phenomenon that is social media, and the internet.
Okay.
Because social media is, like, a few years old, like Facebook and all these. What we actually feel is the internet, you know? And we're all, like, still learning how to actually live with social media. And, you know, a lot of mistakes get made and accidents and, like, new places that we, you know, we go through in our feelings and our perception of the world. So I think that's also, like, a really important distinction to make. I'm interested, like, in... Before, like... we had like high speed internet in SA, or before it was like general, like a general thing. Most like South Africans, or like I would say like maybe Black South Africans, access the internet through mobile devices. When WAP, like, you know, first hit, there was like this is a South African instant messaging app called Mixit. And I always relate that as my first, like, virtual reality experience, because it was really just the same. It was this network of kids across the whole country, and you had all these chat rooms that you could talk to, like, whoever. People formed relationships, like... And I always like looked at that, and there was the power in like the kind of anonymity that you had as a user on Mixit, like, was quite interesting, because, you know, it was, I don't know, in the same way that today it's sort of like an open, like, you know, people just feel like they can do whatever they want on the internet, but there's something liberating about that as well, you know.
I don't know, there's an aspect of the internet in South Africa, and I'm sure it's in many other places as well, that's quite interesting for me, which is the kind of, like, physical, social aspect of the internet. So the internet, of course, it's like virtual social media, but there's also a kind of physical community around how the internet is accessed. Like Tabitha was saying the other day, she was at an internet cafe and some guy was watching porn. And this is like a very different idea of how you access porn, you know, then it's this is in a completely like public, semi-public place. There's like these nodes, and even Bukhus is talking about accessing the internet at school. And it's always kind of, or not always, but there's this general bias towards using the internet in these like vaguely communal spaces, which I think is a very different idea of how the internet exists and what the internet means than a kind of personal computer, you know, you and the internet and your account. It's more like, cool, you are accessing the internet, but you're also accessing this other kind of internet simultaneously, which is the screens that other people are using next to you and the conversations you have with other people in that space about what you see. So I think maybe the internet is like this electronic network, but in South Africa and many other parts of Africa, that electronic network actually plugs into this like mushroom cloud of like a node of a communal network, which is super cool. Mm.
Do you see any other different ways that people, like how African culture is African?
Yeah,
it's African. Cool. Especially me saying African in this accent. Always.
Yeah.
Just
own it.
Because I know
just
what I'm saying. It like, doesn't exist, but I'm trying to get something that it's not working.
I mean, if you can say European or like Western, you can say African. Why is, you know?
No, I think there is, though, this. I think the reason why I have a problem with it is because when you say African, you know, it sort of means it's like a glossing over a lot of, and it's also even the definition of it matters. It really is different for different audiences. When I say African, especially on the internet, people think, African. I might be thinking of Africa as like this new collective of people creating this, but people might think of African as in like African, like wildlife
Well,
safari.
I mean, that's why we have to reclaim it.
Yeah.
That's why we have to reclaim it. Or actually describe it, because Africa as a word is like, it's Arabic, I think, in its origin.
Yeah.
Well,
what do you think Africa?
It's quite contentious.
What do you think Africa would be? If you described it for the internet, the way you do, like what Africa is on the internet right now, it's represented. And you were saying that it hasn't changed much from media in terms of like Ebola and poverty and war.
Like representation, yes, of like.
Yeah, it hasn't changed at all.
Hasn't changed.
But do you think African means something different online?
No, maybe not. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure like in the general, you know, general internet and like general opinions, it has like heavy connotations. But yeah, I mean, for me, like, then the challenge is actually just to reclaim that, or, you know, as he says, scrap it. But I mean, at this point, my feelings towards like, okay, this is just a whole other like conversation, but like the like Arabic presence on the continent, my feelings have changed a bit slightly about that. I'm a bit more like inclusive, like inclusive. So like, I feel like we could own Africa, you know, like as a word or whatever. But yeah, I mean, that's like.
But you're not from South Africa, so is there?
Is
there a shared African?
I relate in more with like the term Afro-descendant because I'm Caribbean, even if I grew up in the West. So I guess that makes me a part of like African history, of the history of Africa, you know, because of like the slave trade, like some people came there for some reason, you know, and then were mixed with some people for some unknown reason, you know, and then that makes some form of like cultures and community that don't relate now to Africa. But you know, I mean, the same is like, I mean, I find it really crazy, like a lot of people in Guyana, where I come from, are really racist toward African, and they would do like anything to dissociate themselves from Africa, you know. And this phenomenon is seen also with like Afro-American, and how like there's this thing like, yeah, we're better, you know. And I think it's also consequences of like the representation and media and the history, and how like their knowledge has been erased, and like they kind of learn their own history starting with slavery, you know. So like not knowing that before that there was a whole culture and like civilization and knowledge that was as important as the knowledge that was developed in the West, but like different, you know. But just like the coloniality of power that makes like system of hierarchy between cultures, system of knowledge and people, you know, that people don't see or like don't know, you know, and that's problematic. So like I guess, I don't know, I relate somehow, you know, but I don't wanna, I'm not like African.
Yeah. Because there's also this, okay, there's also this diaspora.
It's not a white African calling themselves, yeah, African. Exactly. It's quite sad that you don't feel like you can call yourself African.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know, you know. Like,
but there is a diaspora.
Yeah, yeah, like from the diaspora.
There's I feel like there's a diaspora network now, and with the internet, that is redefining this African thing.
But I think it's quite problematic. Actually, I was thinking, I always think about this, these websites like Afropunk and what's the other one? OK Africa. And these things are working very hard to redefine certain notions of Africanisms. I don't know. But I don't know where they come from, you know? They kind of these diasporic constructions that are reflecting something back onto me, which I don't have a complete connection to. I find there's something, and it's this term Africa and African, there's something quite confusing about it, you know. But it has its purpose, and obviously what any attempt to refuse this like dominant narrative is good and is valuable, but there's still something confusing about it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think diaspora conversations, like there's a lot of different like conversations within like Afro-descendant diaspora that are quite different from, you know, I guess what the native or whatever like conversations are. I'm really interested in them because it's always interesting to see, I guess, like the Atlantic slave trade was like a very interesting moment in like human society. You have a group of people who were like forcibly like taken somewhere else and then, you know, create a hybrid culture of where they were from and where they find themselves, but then also want to look back on where they come from and have conversations about that. Those conversations are really interesting to me to like just to hear as well. But I mean, I agree with Nolan. It is very problematic. I think it's always been my issue with like the like Afrofuturism as a global movement. There's a lot of some quite like vaguely historical like conversations and perspectives that, you know, that I have problems with.
But it's also like this Atlantic, transatlantic situation is mediated by through Europe.
Yeah.
And I did this like this mapping project, trying to map undersea cables that bring the internet to Africa, and they all along the west coast go to Portugal, Europe, and then across to North America, South America. So this mediation is still a physical fact, you know. There's still this like the information flows from Africa goes through Europe in order to reach these other Africans. But I think this transatlantic situation has kind of, I don't know, it dominates too much. because there's another coast, there's like the east coast of Africa, which has a whole nother story and a whole nother diaspora, and actually it's also kind of reflected in the infrastructure, this kind of undersea infrastructure that firstly there's this the cable. Okay, anyway, let me not go there. the cables run to the UAE and to India. Those are like the two from the continent, those are the two next landing points, which also have historical precedent, you know, the kind of Arabian Gulf as this, like the Swahili coast, and then India as well. And there are African diasporas in this place. Like, that's a whole nother conversation that it still happens, you know, like the conversations between like the Ethiopian and Somali diaspora all around the world, which is completely different to this Afrofuture, Afropunk, OK Africa situation, you know?
I just want to say a special thank you to my partner for Future Lab Africa, Tegan Bristow. We're going to be growing the podcast, interviewing more people throughout the continent, and also incorporating other festivals, exhibitions, and projects on the culture of arts and technology in Africa. So stay tuned with us. Follow us on SoundCloud. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on our website, futurelabafrica.org. We would love to hear your comments. Love to have you join in our conversation. So see you guys online. Thanks again. Bye.